Hi, it's Stephen Colbert, and I'm here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is the podcast of The Late Show with me, Stephen Colbert, and I'm here with my producer of the podcast, Becca. Hi, Becca.
Hi, Stephen.
So what do people get when they listen to The Late Show Pod Show? Let's sell this thing.
The extended moments, for sure, because we run out of time for broadcast, but we have plenty of time on the podcast.
It's kind of like being a live audience member of the show, because you get things that no one else hears. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The World We Deserve, the officially unofficial podcast for True Detective on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 4, Episode 3, Night Country Part 3. We just finished watching it. Aaron, how you feeling halfway through
I'm
the season?
I'm feeling like you look very much like 40-year-old dad Harry Potter with those glasses on.
There's some tint glasses like, while I get my lenses replaced on my actual glasses.
You look like the prologue Harry Potter from the eighth movie, man. The epilogue. He looks like epilogue Potter, man. He just needs a lightning bolt scar on his head.
I don't get the references.
I know. That's what's so funny about it. I feel like Team Rationale is taking it on the chin this week, man.
Yeah.
This is a big old spook show it's turning into. I'm not mad about it, but the thing that you got to cling to, I guess, is Evangeline just been drinking gallons of that black water.
Yeah,
black water. She's just full to the gills of crazy juice.
Yep, got water on the brain.
Yeah,
I can only hope.
Otherwise.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they're using... So here's the thing that I've noticed about the season is they're using traditional horror storytelling methods to find their way through this case. And whether it turns out to be, like, actual horror or whether it turns out to be just kind of, you know, grim stuff like True Detective typically is, we'll see, I guess, in the fullness of the season. But, yeah, I definitely, like, when a dead guy sits up and says, your mother has talked to me and she really wants you to come be dead with her, that's a good indicator that something spooky's going on.
And granted, he's not dead. I think the thing that really got me is him using her taxpayer name, you know, just, like, hitting her with the Evangeline. How the hell? But on the other hand, like, would she hallucinate him in his, like, Dutch accent? I was trying to think of, like, what's the tell of her hallucinating. Yeah. I mean, I guess she did just hear him talk, but he was just kind of screaming. I didn't even kind of get his accent until he was talking in his normal, I guess I would say, satanic tones. There's just a lot of mystery, and I felt like there's, like, two or three episodes worth of mystery, because I feel like, you know, when they got to the point where it's like, oh, look, this is a candid, which implies there's a third person. I'm like, oh, wow, I can't wait to tune in here to episode 4 to find out who that person is. Smash cut, we're at that person. Like, whoa, this like the case is flying by at a breakneck pace, which, again, I like, but...
Well, they got two murders to solve here, right? They got, well, a lot of murders. They got two instances of murder. They got the scientist and they got Annie. I mean, you got to solve them both, right?
Annie's starting to seem like she got polar bear'd. She got ice. She got wampa'd. She's like Luke Skywalker without the Force.
Definitely in an ice cave at the end, based on the background. Or maybe she's, you know, doing photo replacement stuff on her. Like, that's a Snapchat filter or something. I don't know. But yeah, she's definitely in an ice cave.
What's the star-shaped wounds? Do polar bears have star-shaped teeth, or is that...
This one does. File them down. He's hardcore, man. Yeah.
Wow. That's a commitment to the bit.
It doesn't have to be a polar bear, but it's a pretty good guess. But the star-shaped stuff, yeah, that doesn't make any sense if it's a polar bear.
What do we make of the Hank truthers being right? I thought that was a big reach. I thought Hank was just all Twitter-pated with the Russian bride, but they make a kind of compelling case that he might be throwing the case at some level.
Yeah, and I don't know why yet. I mean, it could be for the mine. If the mine goes away, his job probably goes away too.
Would he? But, as a police officer, I guess maybe you don't have as many people if the mine shuts down.
Yeah, that's the thing. If the whole town just disintegrates and they, because, you know, it's hard to go back to the way that the town was before it completely changed, right?
Well, plus it's a fun fact in Alaska, if your town dips below a certain population size, the Royal Mounties just come over and just take over.
Okay.
They just ride over, ride over on moose and their red jackets, and, you know,
yeah.
It's like Yosemite Sam. They just fire their guns and the Americans cow in terror. So I could see not wanting that happen in your town, but yeah, I guess you're right. There's good old-fashioned naked interest, but I mainlined The Truth of the Universe, a.k.a. Season 1 of True Detective, since we last talked. I watched the whole damn season in the last, like, 3 days. And someone tweeted to me, because everybody's doing this now. I think one of the awesome things about Season 4 of True Detective is everybody going back and watching Season 1 of True Detective.
Yeah.
But one of the things, because, you know, you remember it being, like, a big victory for Russ and Marty, right? They found the giant with the scarred face, and a big time child murderer in Louisiana put down. But Russ makes that a point. It's like, you know, they find this videotape of, like, all these men, you know, hurting all these kids, and he's like, this is just, like, one person. Like, you know, we didn't get them all, Marty. And Marty's like, well, we got our guy. Uh-huh. And with Russ Cole connected, it's like, I do wonder. You're right. It's like the easiest explanation is, like, the mind is paying him off to make it go away for some reason. But I guess if I'm going to play my Danvers, number one, it does feel like it might be connected with the Tuttles and all that stuff. But also, if I ask the question, if Hank's covering for the mind, why would the mind cover up a monster attack or a polar bear attack? Like, did she get into one of their minds at the same time a polar bear got into the mind? And they're just yeah. like, oh my God, we have a liability here. The corporate lawyers is like, you got someone left a chain link undone. The polar bear got in. The activist got in. You're on the hook.
Yeah,
let's stage
I mean.
It to make it look like a murder. What?
The polar bear stuff is not making sense, I guess. The star shaped stuff, yeah. The cover up, why a cover up if somebody just got murdered by a polar bear? It doesn't make any sense. We don't know that Hank's covering anything up yet, but it seems more and more like it. So. Yeah, polar bear seems like a red herring.
And again, I ask, are, like, Danvers and Hank co-captain of this football team? What the fuck? How is he leading a search party of deputized yokels without her knowledge, or certainly against her will, as he's stealing yeah. a bunch of... I tell you what, I will be actively pissed if by the end of next episode I do not more understand what the fuck is going on with Hank and Danvers, and, like, why...
I'm
he
with
just
you.
Gets to do whatever the fuck he wants to do on a big time investigation where there's eyes on him, and she's just like, whatever. And it seems like that's just the way she runs her department. That makes no fucking sense.
Yeah, the more and more we see of Hank, I remember what everybody's commentary was on him in the first episode. And it's so completely different than what I think of Hank now. Hank is not just some dumbass who's oblivious and, you know, fixated on his Russian bride coming over and just forgetful and whatnot. He's actively malicious and dangerous, and he seems like a bad
yeah.
guy.
Yeah.
He's a hothead.
Good call.
Absolutely. I mean, he hits his son for a real reason. Here he's challenging Liz, you know, face to face, essentially just like inviting her to take a swing at him or something, which she mm-hmm. almost does. And yeah, I just he's a nasty guy. I don't know what Liz's hang up though is with checking him, because she kind of lets him, you know, she'll throw coffee in his face and she'll tell him to get back to work. But what I'm with Evangeline there. What was that? Like, that wasn't mm-hmm. a punishment. That wasn't putting him in his place. That was just status quo.
Well, almost like even before we got there, when they're in the car and Evangeline is laying out the case of, you know, why I think Hank is submarine in this case, and like Danvers is like not wanting to go there,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, why the fuck would you cover for this guy? It's there's something,
and she's communicating with
crazy.
Him almost exclusively through Pete, which I think is weird. I don't know if she's intimidated by him or
God, no, can't be.
There's something
be
in their
something.
History that
well, and also so Evan. Is it because is she trying to keep secret the fact that her and Hank did hook up? because I thought it was interesting how Navarro said,
it's possible.
She goes, I don't shit where I eat, or I don't fuck where I eat. She's like, anymore. Because we know she fucked Eccleston.
Yeah, Connolly.
Connolly.
Mm.
And I just assumed from, like, the way the way things were going, and also some of the preseason kind of, like, chatter, that these people were in a relationship. But it seems like maybe that isn't common knowledge, and they're doing something with the hidden nature of, Clark and Annie's relationship. And yeah. But, like, at what point is it, like, who cares? Like, apparently everyone knew you fucked Connolly, and that was a scandal, and you seemed to fuck a bunch of people around school. Around the town, and that seems to be kind of scandalous. It's like, just get him off the force, man. Is she worried about, like, a sexual harassment suit?
I don't know. I don't know what, like, hold he has on his position here.
I wonder if that's what it is. That he's, like, got some kind of trumped up, or maybe real. Like, you know, maybe she came on to him and she was his superior, and that's pretty open and shut. I don't know.
Yeah. Could be. Yeah, we'll see more. Hopefully next episode we'll learn a lot more about that, because I'm dying to know too. I'm really just, there's so much stuff, man. So much information here. You think
new
there's
twist
anything
and
in
shout.
That,
oh, go ahead.
You think there's anything in that evidence room that is going to be more important than just, hey, there were selfies here and then some shots that somebody else took, so we know someone talking.
Gotta
to
be all that weird shit's gotta be,
yeah, all the bones
important.
And stuff. I mean, there's the phone, I guess that came back, right? So now they know about the ice cave stuff, so
right,
which we don't know how Pete hacked that phone, but he did. I don't know. And you send these bodies off to Anchorage, right? That's where they're headed, so they don't have this physical evidence anymore. They're kind of relying on whatever Connolly's going to give them. I does that guarantee that her and Connolly are going to sleep together again? It's pretty much guaranteed when they said this was the last time. But
yeah,
but is it extra guaranteed
time.
Now?
Over and over under. Where you like it? I'm thinking three. I'm thinking three.
Top or bottom?
I actually think three is the number.
Three more times this season?
Yeah. No. Three of total. They'll bone three times.
Oh, okay. So two more.
Yeah. Half the episodes they'll be boning.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I'll take the under if you're going over on that. We'll see.
No, I was thinking three. I'm just calling it three.
Oh, okay. I'll take two. Two sounds good.
Okay. All right. Two sounds good, does it?
Yeah.
This is the sound of your engine getting clean. Because BP and Amoco gasolines with Invigorate clean deep in your engine as you drive, helping your car run better to take you farther. Fuel a cleaner engine with BP and Amoco gasolines with Invigorate at a station near you. Optimizes your engine's performance from the harmful effects of deposits caused by minimum detergent fuels. Requires continuous use. Results depend on what you drive and how you drive. Comparison made for fuels with the same ethanol content.
Yeah, you know you need protein to fuel results, but it's not easy when you're drinking the same bland, chalky shake every day. Stop punishing yourself and get to GNC for the best protein in the game, including all the hottest brands and crave-worthy flavors that'll keep you coming back for more. We're talking protein that legit tastes like cookies, your favorite cereals, indulgent desserts, and more. So bust out of your protein rut and actually look forward to those shakes with unbeatable protein at unbeatable prices. Fuel your fitness with protein at GNC.
So I want to talk about the twist and shout revelation, because we seem that here's another True Detective chestnut, where the two detectives are recalling a case, and they're saying with the words out of their mouth is one thing, and then the flashback is telling us another. Mm-hmm. We're hearing murder-suicide. So that guy implies that guy gets his head blown off. So who do you think, who's your money on who shot who? And there's an interesting suggestion in chat, is like, maybe that's the source of the Hank,
that's
Liz
possible.
Beef, because he, when Peter asked him, cause you know, Peter's doing something smart. He's trying to fish for information, not saying he knows the story. I thought Hank played pretty coy there. That was definitely something I wanted to bring up.
Yeah. If Hank might know everything about that case. But in my opinion, the easy call here is that Evangeline shoots him. But I don't know. Because the swerve is Liz actually shot him.
I feel like that's the swerve.
6
years? They don't. We don't know how long ago the Wheeler case is. It was sometime before.
Okay.
So Hank is the one that took Evangeline off the Annie case. Mm. So I'm guessing, and then Liz is the one that busted her off the force.
Yeah.
So there had to be post Annie, but before obviously she was thrown off the force. Or wait, no, okay. It wasn't post. Was it post Annie? When do you think the flashback to the midwifery happened? It was like a year before Annie died, several years, because she was still wearing her APF uniform.
7 years ago, right? April 22nd, 7 years ago. I don't have
okay,
to guess.
Okay.
It says it.
Gotcha. Okay. So that's a year before.
Yeah. It could be between then and now.
Yeah, it has to, though, because mm-hmm. like Hank wasn't still the making the shots because Liz said she's the one that transferred her.
Which makes a lot of sense if Evangeline shoots her, right? She's got this sort of pent-up animosity toward guys who hurt women, especially Native True. Women, and like that would happen after any case. So
where do you gauge this information in terms of gauging the swerve, as you say? The way Evangeline was trying to, it seems like she's the one trying to bring it up, and it felt like she was trying to reassure Liz, like, hey, that Wheeler case, we did the only thing we could do. It's kind of like, it sounds to me like something you'd say to a fellow cop if they did something crazy and you're trying to excuse it, rather than like you're looking
Vic
for
Mackey
absolution.
Yeah, after you after you get in from a long night out with him, for sure. No, that's the thing. That's why my gut says they're gonna swerve us on that, but it makes way more sense right now with what we know for Evangeline to shoot him.
It's also super interesting to contrast that with season one, where, you know, Marty kills Reggie Ledoux because he just convinced that he's the killer. He finds those kids in the box truck locked up, and he just comes out, blows his head off. And, you know, Marty, you know, years later lays it at his feet. He's like, look, if you hadn't, you know, not for nothing, if you hadn't done that, we might not have had a whole bunch of dead kids. You know, we might have gotten to the bottom of the thing. We asked this guy some questions. So I wonder if they're building a similarity where it's going to turn out. Because clearly the other guy is the ex-equipment engineer, Tagok. Was that this guy's name?
Mm-hmm.
He knows a hell of a lot about what's going on at Slough Station.
Probably.
Seems like.
His reaction was interesting. He hears about the deaths. He gets very sad momentarily, but then he gets very angry.
Yeah. And why the hell did the cleaning lady and the delivery guy not mention, oh, yeah, these guys are pretty insulated. No one goes in, no one goes out, except for the one dude that came in and out.
Yeah.
That didn't show up on Peter's research. I mean, I guess that he has no, like, government contact information at all. He doesn't have, like, a birth certificate, social security number. He's, like, off the fucking grid. But still, you think the cleaning lady and the delivery guy would have known, unless they're all new.
How does that work? I mean, it's partially funded by the Tuttles, right? The Tuttle United. But it's got to be government sanctioned. I mean, these research stations, they're not privately owned in these areas. So, like, the guy has to have information. He has to have a birth certificate. He has to have something in order to become a scientist working at Salal. The Tuttles don't just say, hey, we got this guy we want to hire. Don't ask for his identification or his credentials.
Maybe in Alaska? Or they... Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I would buy that there is forged credentials. But, like, no credentials is weird. Yeah, the fact that there's just no records for him. But that was also a thing that they had going on in season one of True Detective, but it was always excused by, like, oh, the hurricane came through and it flooded the files, or the files got computerized back in 1995 and all this other stuff. It's like, here it's like, well, the files got stolen by Hank, and also this publicly funded research station just didn't keep any. It is weird.
Yeah, what else does Hank have in his house? He's probably got a lot of dirt.
Polar bear. He's got a polar bear in a crawl space. What do you make of the baby births? We see one that was like a scare that it might be a stillbirth, mm-hmm. and then an actual stillbirth. Clearly, this is tied to the mining.
Yeah, they make it pretty explicit. Because it's interesting to me. So those are years apart, right? And you could imagine that mm-hmm. the pollution would get worse and worse as they continue to mine. Sure. So, you know, what may result in a near stillbirth results in actual stillbirth later.
Sure.
The thing that really struck me was when they have Liz go to the wake or the mourning, I don't know what you would call it, for this child, the stillborn child. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, she's kind of like, what the hell am I doing here? I don't think I really belong here. But she's trying, right? Like Leah would say. Mm-hmm. She's trying to care about mm-hmm. the place. And then, boom, they smash cut right to her washing her hands in this filth.
Yeah.
And they're... I feel like they're making the explicit connection there. Like, this is a stillbirth because of the water here.
And she was washing... She wasn't back at her house, right? That was...
I think she was in their house, yeah.
Okay, so also, I think they imply that the worst of the pollution is being confined into the villages where the native folks are living, and that, like, in town, like, I don't think Liz has dirty water.
I haven't seen it be dirty, no.
Or Kavik has dirty water. He even expects, like, all those poor guys in the villages, you know? Mm-hmm. So, honestly, when she was washing her hands, I thought maybe she would have gone home, and it's like that was telling us that, oh, shit, the water's getting... It's affecting the white folks' water now.
oh, no. Now she's got a problem with it, yeah.
Yeah, but again, I only watched this thing once. Oh, by the way, mm-hmm. If you're watching us live because you're a club member, first, thank you for your support. Secondly, go ahead. If you got any questions or theories, pop them in the chat, and we'll get to that in the instant talk portion. And if you're missing that and you're like, oh, shit, I wish I could talk about True Detective Live with Jim and Aaron, well, support.baldmove.com next week. Okay, what else? There's just so much fucking dense information.
Let me ask you this. Navarro, yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. She's got an orange in her hand, which we know is always a bad sign. She throws it out in the darkness, and it comes back. Super weird. But then later she sees somebody running out into the darkness. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this is just like a vision of hers because she's got this idea that she just wants to go, like she talks about, right? Just that's me and I'm just going and I'm never looking back. But there's a person out there, and then she runs after him, hits her head on the ice, passes out, wakes up in like a war zone, but Holden seems to be there and says, tell my mommy. And then there's some backwards talk that I'll have to go reverse and listen
to. Yeah. Fuck. I forgot about the concussion because all of the real crazy stuff happens after she gets concussed. So.
Okay. Yeah.
Team so Rational learned. Fighting back out of its corner. Yeah. Thought you had his pin. Nah. Where's head trauma? There's black.
Yeah.
Black water and hair and head trauma. QED.
Mm-hmm. but that's why is she seeing Liz's son?
That is, well, are, is flashback. She or is she seeing, you know, because we don't know a lot about her. I mean, obviously that's my inference too, but like, why are we the polar assuming? Bear. Oh, right. The polar bear. Fuck. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's gotta be Liz's kid.
Right.
I don't know.
And just tell my mom. The thing. It's like hard
to explain. I'm imagining this, so I'm guessing Navarre would know that, right? She would know Liz's kind of tragic backstory. They got close enough. That,
I would assume, yeah, pretty much everybody would know that.
What did you think Navarro meant when she's talking about Hank and the mind behind him?
I don't know. I didn't catch that.
Yeah, this is something they were talking about, like, when she was, like, getting mad that she wasn't pressing Hank or, like, wasn't... she's like, you know about Hank and the mind behind him. I'm like, what the fuck is that? Oh, no, it's the mind behind him. That's what she said.
Oh, that would make more sense, because I can't see him.
See, I huff too much psychosphere. I'm looking for looking for shadows. The mind behind him. Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah. So that makes even a stronger connection that, like, it might just be a follow the money... rather than covering for some kind of diabolical cult shenanigans. It's just, man, I tell you what, going back to season one, and maybe it's a fool's errand to try to connect them too, but like the broad speaking, 30,000 foot view of that season, it's a powerful family with political influences in Louisiana called the Tuttles that were setting up a bunch of Christian schools to bilk money out of taxpayers, but also to various upper echelon people in that institution use that as a way to scout out vulnerable children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard not to make the conclusion about, like, when we're talking about this season being, you know, kind of fixated on, dealing with a lot of, you know, these missing, murdered indigenous native women, that like the Tuttles are like, well, our shit's blown up here in the South. Let's head up north and prey on a new vulnerable population. And especially they went through and they'd flood into areas like the hurricanes hit, and they would do like relief stuff and low income stuff. And I just wonder if they're there's one connection. But again, that's a weird thing to be like, you know, shine a spotlight on an issue and be like, it's actual devil worshippers. I don't know. I got two wolves fighting inside me.
Yeah. Everybody seems to be experiencing very similar phenomenon as well. And I know this has been talked about since the beginning with the microbes or the toxicity of the water or whatever is happening here. But this is the one thing that I guess I didn't foresee the scientist doing when he woke up, which is saying absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Although he's saying things, he's saying we woke her up. He's matching like stories with people, but he's not giving us any information.
Yeah. He's singing from Clark's playbook.
Yeah. I didn't think he'd be a raving madman when he woke up, but here we are.
Man, what did you think about Liz doubling down on the chin tattoos? I thought that was like, I still don't.
Does Leah know why?
I don't know.
That's my
I'm
biggest
surprised
question.
Leah went on with it. Like, at some point, you got to be like, fuck you, Mom.
Yeah. This is my heritage. This is who I am. Why do you hate me? Like,
yeah.
The fuck, yeah. Lady?
Yeah. But I mean, I know it's complicated.
Here's my guess.
Calling out your stepmom.
Here's my guess as to what is going through Liz's mind. She's lost a child.
Mm-hmm.
She, at some point in this episode, what is it? Leah gets home and she says, if you've been out there with those mind people, you know what happens to those people. It's dangerous to be one of them, right? I think she thinks the same about being a
it's
native
dangerous
woman
about being
here.
A native woman. Yeah.
I think this is her reflexive reaction attempting to protect Leah, but it's coming across as...
Is there some kind of statistic that says
asshole.
Native American women with facial tattoos are more at risk for? Because it's like, you know,
you're wearing it on your face either way, right?
I was gonna say, yeah, Leah's not like I wouldn't accuse her of being white passing. You know, wouldn't think you're a Native woman except for those chin lines, and that's.
But
a
it's
dead
a statement. It's a statement, right?
It's definitely a statement. So, yeah. And maybe it does inflame like racist people, and it makes you more at risk. I would not. I would absolutely believe that if that's the case.
Or
but
maybe
just,
it
inflames
the people who work at the mine, right? Because they associate the natives with doing the mass of the protesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's tied up in that. I think this is a protection thing, but
interesting.
Boy, it expressed
itself
in a real
it's
shitty
still
way.
Really shitty. And if you were convinced that she's just a worst, she outs herself as an all caps texter in this episode.
Oh no! Did she?
Yeah, you just look at her and Pete's message history. It's all.
Oh,
where are you with this guy? Why have you hacked this phone? You're under 30. Hack this phone. Like it's. Oh
have
my
you
god!
Found Tagaki? Yeah, at 3:30 in the morning. Any boss that expects you to be awake at 3:30 in the morning to answer a text.
Sure.
Could go walk into the ice.
I feel like Pete's really fucking up this relationship with his wife, man. He
yeah.
is like.
Yeah.
That whole. Am I in trouble? Get the fuck out of here, dude.
Yeah, he needs to make a choice.
You broke the lamp at 4 o'clock in the morning. Now this lady's going to try to pass her final on 3 hours of sleep. What the fuck? Yeah, you're in trouble. That'd been the first time he'd probably be in trouble, but like this doesn't seem like it's the first time you've done something like that.
No, and she's making the point that she's really struggling, and I don't feel like it's sinking in, right? Like when she says, what does she say? I'm in nursing school raising a child with a cop for a husband. She's telling him like, dude, I'm really struggling here. You need to help out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes and answers his stupid phone. So
I will say the one thing, you know, we've been bagging on Liz a couple weeks now. She is excellent with children. She seems like
that's the type of mom
that's a really good little boy, little girl mom, but then kind of doesn't know what to do with them when they transition to adolescence. But she is amazing with children.
Yeah. No,
I think that's what
she
telling
was great
us.
With the mac and cheese scene. Yes, they're telling you she was very good probably with her child. I mean, everything we've seen of it. Like
exactly. Yeah, she seems like she really loved being a mom. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And take note, too, that that's not her child, right? I think that's part of it, too, is she's very good with other people's children now because she doesn't have the responsibility of protecting them.
True, true. What do you think about the accident on a search? Because I couldn't help but notice another incidence of increased aggression. Like, they're talking to London there, and he's losing his mind, and all of a sudden there's pandemonium happening in the lobby, and the camo guys are going at the cops, and the doctors and nurses are getting their licks in. But they said it was, there was an accident, like, you know, someone Dick Cheney'd somebody out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it does seem like it's just an instance of increased aggression, too. Again, probably connected with the Blackwater.
Yeah. No, I'm super curious to see what exactly happened there and what's going to happen, because Hank is responsible for this, right? If it was a Dick Cheney situation, Hank's head should roll.
She's
brought in civilians to do this job, untrained,
unqualified.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she told him not to, and he ignored her, and yeah. But she probably won't do anything. She'll throw another coffee in his face, and that'll be it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, hey, man, do you think that we should get to the audience participation part of this, or do you have some more?
Fun.
You got a hail of bullets to give us. All right.
No.
This is the part where we say goodbye to the non-club members, support.baldmove.com, if you want to get access to the instant talk, instant take portion of the podcast. Also, we're less than a week away from our annual Groundhog Day fundraiser. This Groundhog, we are watching 24 hours of Spider-Man movies. We're starting noon this Friday, February 2nd, going to noon Saturday, February 3rd. We're raising money for thecureowls.org, the Cure Alzheimer's Fund, a great charity that has a personal connection to me, at least. And I know a lot of Bald Movers, a lot of people around the world. You can check us out on our Twitch or our YouTube page during the duration of that. If you want to give some money, there's going to be some cool exclusive merch, some giveaways, some special appearances. Check out more information on how to donate at groundhog.baldmove.com. truedetective@baldmove.com is how you give us feedback, and @baldmove everywhere is how you keep up with us on social media. Let's get to the instant talk portion now.